Okay, this is Jeff Newman, chair of the PDP work team. I was wondering if Gisela or Marika is looking at the phone list so they can start the roll call.
Absolutely, Jeff. I'll do it with Gisela. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Avery Doria, Sofia Bekele, Tatiana Kramtsova. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We also have Alex Gakuru, apologies, on the call. Both Ulrich Knoben will be joining late, and we have apologies from Brian Winterfeld. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Newman. It is January 28th, 2010. This is our normally scheduled meeting at half hour earlier, so I have a feeling we may get a couple people that join half hour from now. But I appreciate everyone moving the time around for me. So just what I want to do on today's call, the agenda, is to first go over some action items that came out of the last call, just a status update on that. Then we'll go over the stage five questions so we can issue the survey out hopefully by later today or tomorrow or as soon as possible so that we can, when we get into a discussion on stage five on the next call, we can, or two calls from now, we can actually have a fruitful discussion looking back at that survey. And then finally going back to stage four to try to address some of the open questions that still remain. So with that said, does anybody want to add? I also do want to talk about, again, Nairobi, to see, you know, we've taken a poll as to who's going to be there. It seems like we'll have pretty good attendance from this work team. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Does anybody have anything else to add to the agenda? Okay, hearing silence, we'll move on then to just a quick status. On the last call, we had talked about there were a number of questions that we've had in stage four that deal with the board report, or actually I should say the council report to the board, and we were talking a bunch about you know, what elements we think the board would like to see or the board should see when a suggestion was made, good suggestion was made to say, well, you know, probably more important to ask the board members what they would like to see and to see what they're getting now, what could be done better, what else they'd like to see. And so that said, the action item I took on was to send a note to the chairs, the GNSO chair, the council chair, and the two vice chairs to see what the proper protocol would be on a work team sending a note to the board asking them these questions. Given the response that we had on the proposed face-to-face meeting and the controversy it caused, not so much on the idea of the face-to-face, but on the fact of whether a work team could ask for this or whether that kind of thing had to go through the council as a whole, and then there were some side discussions on that call as to whether the work team, on communications from the work team to the external body. So trying to avoid that, I had sent a note to Chuck and to Stefan and Olga on the proper protocol of how a letter would be sent, excuse me, to the board governance committee. And I've not gotten a response back. I think it may have been, I was told this morning that I'm not able to post to the chairs list, so that may have caused a little bit of delay because I had sent a note to that list, but I think Marika has and Glenn have forwarded that on. So we'll see what response we get. The plan is to, once we figure out that protocol, is to send a letter either through the council, through the steering committee, or through the work team directly, soliciting feedback on those questions. Is there anybody have a question on that or comments? Okay, so that's where that lies at this point. Once we receive the protocol, I'll draft something up, send it around to the group to see what you all think as far as the questions to ask, and then we'll take it from there. So jumping now to stage five questions, which are up on Adobe right now, these are the questions that came up through our brainstorming sessions, several meetings, physical meetings ago, I guess it was Mexico now, that when these questions were first brainstormed, and it's come up through, you know, other discussions that we've had. We sent the questions around on the list, and James had some comments on it. So I was wondering, James, if you can go through your comments and, you know, so we can address them.
Sure. Just a moment. Let me pull those up. I think they were very brief. And we can take them by section if that makes a little bit more sense so that we don't skip around.
Yeah, let's do it that way.
Okay. Well, on the first section, I didn't have any issues with the this is for the periodic assessment of PDP recommendations and policies, and I didn't have any comment relative to the questions that we've laid out here, 1A through 1G. I just wanted to add perhaps 1H, an additional question, which let me pull it up here, essentially say that the working group itself, when it's developing the policy, should have some role in determining what the success conditions will be. And so where these metrics are coming from as far as to determine whether or not the PDP has been effective in addressing the problem, I think that there should be some role for the working group in developing those. This is something that I hear quite frequently internally to my company, which is that whenever someone proposes an idea or a change, you know, the immediate reaction is, how will you know when you've been successful? So I just wanted to work that into this particular section.
Okay, so you're saying that the working group the working group would then say, as part of its report, would then say, so when we assess this in a year, 2 years, whatever the period is, these are the measures of success, and this is how we'll know that the policy has worked or that more work is needed, essentially, is your question?
Yeah, and I think that will, have the beneficial side effect of by thinking about those metrics while the policy proposals are being developed, I think it will help crystallize some of the problem resolutions that are being developed. So, like, pick on tasting here for a little bit. I think that if the working group has said, you know, we would like to review this in 12 months and see, you know, a significant greater than 40% reduction in tasting, or, you know, reported excess deletes in the AGP, and then the report came back, like, from compliance saying that it was 90%+ reduction, then they would say that policy has been a success. So I think that by causing the working group to examine those questions and develop those metrics, alongside with the policy recommendations, can make those policy recommendations, or just will improve the quality of the policy recommendations.
Okay, I think that's a good question to add to that list. I think that makes a lot of sense. Is there any other comments on that? I thought I heard someone.
Yeah, this is Audrey. I wanted to ask a question.
Sure.
So what you're saying is, what would go on the questionnaire is something like, do you think a section should be required in the report that states success criteria? Is that what you're saying?
Aubrey, this is James speaking, and the way I worded it was 1H, what role should the working group have in proposing or developing performance metrics?
Okay, thanks.
Okay. And then the second question is on Section 2, and what you have in the email is, say, I have some concern that these could be seen as the various scenarios under which the council could subvert the consensus of the group, or am I reading this incorrectly? So can you just explain that comment? And just for those of you, it's question two, or it's, I should say, group two, where the questions in the chart say, should the GNSO be, and he's talking about the council here, be required to conduct an assessment at the end of a PDP process? Well, let me ask a question. Marika, when we say GNSO there, we mean GNSO council?
Yes, correct.
All right, maybe we should let's change that in the wording just so it's clear when people are responding to the survey.
Okay.
And then it says, if yes, what elements should be included in this process? The BGC, the Board Governance Committee Working Group, reports that suggests checking One, does the scoping of the issue remain valid? Are all relevant stakeholders aware of and involved in the process? As no one stakeholder group, we should word this a little differently, is one stakeholder group dominating the process? Are any necessary expert opinions provided? Data has been provided and used where appropriate, and can the proposed policy be implemented? So, James, your concern, if you could just explain it with those.
So this is James speaking, and my concern really focused on the bulleted list in 2B, and I kind of go back and forth on this one, Jeff, to be honest, is that I recognize there's a need for council to somewhat act as a check on what comes out or sanity test on what might result from a PDP working group to make sure that it makes sense, it's implementable, that it's within picket fence and all that other jazz. But I also want to be certain that if the PDP is, does reach a consensus and does is representative or has participation from all the stakeholder groups and comes back with a policy recommendation, that the council isn't using one of these bulleted items here as a way to negate the consensus that was formed in the working group. So, for example, if I said, well, there was, this is a good policy idea, but I noticed that there were three or four extra, business constituency reps on this particular working group. Therefore, I move that we just, disregard this policy recommendation. So I kind of go back and forth between the idea that the council should be a check on what comes out of the working group versus their role in just managing policy development and respecting the consensus that comes out of those groups. So I don't know how to formulate that into a question, just wanted to get that out into the discussion.
This is Aubrey, if I can comment.
Absolutely. Aubrey?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the fear. I do think that this is, though, part of the due diligence of the council and the reason that the council has representation from all sides of the issue. And I think also that, because we've been talking about similar things in the working group work team about, what does the chartering organization do when it gets a report that has full consensus, or what does it do when it gets a report that has only strong support, et cetera, and how does it treat that? So this very much dovetails with the discussion we had yesterday. It seems to me that it is part of the due diligence. It obviously has to be tempered by the fact that all sides are represented, that if after asking those questions there aren't reasonable answers that say, no, there wasn't wide enough representation, or no, the process was manipulated by one set of people, there's an answer that something can be done. And what gets done in the working group team is that it gets sent back to the working group with questions. I don't think there's ever a notion that it just gets thrown out. And the whole idea, I think, is that things do get sent back with questions. And, the option that the council has is to say, yes, due process was met, no, due process wasn't met, and to add its own conclusions to the report. So I think it's necessary that they do this, and I think it's also necessary that they cannot throw things away. They can send back for clarification. They can annotate. They can say due diligence was followed or not, but certainly they can't just throw stuff away.
Yeah, so without answering the questions, because I think we're going to spend a good amount of time answering these questions or talking about them. I think James made a point that certainly with questions that should be asked about it. I would also raise the point, and I hear echo, so let me, I don't know if it's me, my phone, let me pick up.
Is this any better or is there still echo?
Much better.
Okay, yeah, I'll just pick up the handset. I think one of the questions we need to ask is, it's not just at the end stage, right? Right, James? I mean, you would hope that during the life of the working group, if the liaison, the council liaison to the working group or the chair of the working group notices that it is dominated by one group over others, or that one group is seriously underrepresented or not showing up, or you know, whatever it is, you would hope that at those intermediary points, that would be reported to the council, and the council could manage it all during the process, as opposed to, you know, the big fear that, like you expressed, the group comes and works, you know, a year, year and a half, comes to consensus, and then all of a sudden, these issues are raised by the council for the first time. You would hope that it never gets to that point, but I do think we should ask that question in this section about, you know, what is the exact role? You know, Aubrey made a statement that said, you know, it's not really for the council to, or it's not thought of for the council to substitute its own judgment simply because they don't think the group may have been representative, but should be more likely to refer it back with questions. I think that's something we should not take as an assumption, but it's probably something if we all feel that way, we should document.
Can I comment again?
Sure.
This is one of the places where at some point it may be good to have a meeting of the two halves of the question, the working team group and the PDP, and just to see, because I think some of those things are included in the working group, working team proposal. So, yeah, I think you're right, but we may want to at some point look over each other's shoulders.
Yep. Okay, so Marika, do you have enough information to draft a question on that for the survey, or a few questions, or?
If someone would like to propose some specific questions, that would be helpful.
So I think one thing that came out of it is, and I'll let others speak if they want, is basically a question that says, okay, when these elements are looked at in 2B, if they find, you know, some of these have not been met, or I'm trying to think, some of them aren't worded as yes or no questions. But if there are issues, what is the role of the council in getting those issues addressed? In other words, does it? We're all making the assumption that it should just refer it back to the working group to answer those questions. But you know, when they go through this checklist in 2B, okay, then so what? In 2C, the question 2C would be, you know, what happens if any of these areas or council finds deficiencies in any of these areas?
Okay.
Does anybody have James? Would that address your question, or is there a different way to say it?
No, I think that's fine, and we can tackle that when the survey comes out. Like I said, I don't want to dive into the substance of the question now, but. Just the engineer in me thinks that we're building in a recipe for an endless loop, so I just want to be mindful of that.
No, I think it's a good point. So I'm glad you brought it up. It's not just the engineer in you; it's the knowing how policy processes work too.
Well, there seems to be a tendency to be an over reliance on other bodies to make an ultimate decision, whether it's a working group, council, or the board, or something like that. And I want to make sure that, you know, there are hard stops in the process somewhere.
Okay. And then the third topic of questions that'll be in stage five are on the first two questions looked at really the specific PDP that was going on, you know, how to review that. The third question, or the third topic, is reviewing the overall PDP process and having periodic assessments on the overall PDP process. So there are some sub-questions there, but James, I didn't see that you had any specific comments on it, just a general statement of, you know, let's see how this discussion today goes. But I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, this is James speaking. I didn't really think that there was anything particularly you know, noteworthy in that list, just the thought that perhaps that could also be considered as part of the role of the working group to develop their roadmap for, I'm sorry, this is the overall process, so I'm gonna withdraw that.
Well, you could say it could be the purview of this working group to determine, because this is the overall, and actually one of the questions that we may want to address is, does this work team, or I should say, does the PPSC become, do we have a recommendation that that is converted or something like that is converted into a standing committee of the council? So maybe we can ask, I'm not presupposing yes or no, but I've heard some people talk about that. Is that something, Marika, we want to form into a question? Maybe instead of this committee, we just say, should there be a standing committee that reviews these that reviews the PDP on an ongoing basis? I guess that's partially in 3C anyway. I mean, so who should be responsible for it?
Hey, Jeff, this is James.
Yep.
With a question. Yeah, and I may reveal some of my... I'm getting a really bad echo, by the way, and I am on a handset, so I don't know if that's just me or...
I'm getting the same echo. This is Ali.
I hear you as well.
Okay. Well, maybe we could see if the operator can look into that. So my question, Jeff, was, it may reveal some ignorance in this area a little bit, but isn't this periodic review kind of a top-to-bottom periodic review of all the structures and procedures part of the, you know, if not the bylaws, isn't that part of what the board is responsible to do? You know, I'm thinking about all the different stakeholder review processes and whether or not that's prescribed somewhere in some structure, and whether or not this could just be included in that. So that's just a question of whether this would be an appropriate inclusion into existing review review timetables.
Well, Marika, you have your hand raised. You want to address that?
This is Marika. No, what I just wanted to mention is that the working group work team in the working group guidelines, a document that they have developed, they actually have a proposal for the PPSC to consider in that relation, and their suggestion is that the council, the Genius of Council, reviews on a yearly basis the working group guidelines and the PDP, not meaning a review as we're doing now, but just basically checks, like, do we think that there's anything that needs to be added or changed? Do you think that we need to have a more in-depth review? And if yes, then convenes an ad hoc or standing committee or, you know, whoever is tasked with it to actually conduct that review on the basis of the comments received or the changes that people feel need to be made. So that's one of the proposals, and I would encourage you to review that in more detail in the working group guidelines, which is probably going to be posted for comment by the end of next week, to see if that's something as well that, you know, you would like to recommend as well, or whether, you know, there are any other process you would like to recommend on how to address, you know, any potential changes to the PDP going forward.
Yeah, and I think one other distinction we should make is that, and then I'll go to Avery, is a number of these elements that we've talked about now for the, you know, last several months or close to a year are things that aren't necessarily going to be reflected in the bylaws, but are more appropriately reflected in, I don't know if we call it a rules of operation or kind of a guidebook to a policy development process that'll be, you know, for the council to use or to refer to. And I'm not sure those are the types of things that the board under the bylaws would necessarily look at. They may be more appropriate for the council or, you know, the people bottom up to review. So, Avery, you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing. I think that these things are definitely different than the external reviews that happen every 5 years. These are a review by an SO of the way it's doing everything, whether it's every year or some other period. I think it's just different than that external review, which I think has moved from 3 to 5 years, or is moving from 3 to 5 years, I think.
Right. And I think they're doing that because when was the GNSO review done? It was 2005, was it started? Or 2006? And, you know, still 2010, and we're working on
2005, the term of reference was started.
Right. So, you know, it's 2010, and in theory, we should have completed two additional review cycles by now, after the initial one.
Wow.
So yeah, so there are provisions for external reviews, but they're not from beginning to end. They take quite a while to implement. Okay, does anybody have anything else to add to as far as questions for Stage 5, or does everyone feel comfortable in sending this out now in its current form as a survey? Did everyone just hear a beep, or is that just me?
It wasn't.
I got the beep as well.
Beep was me having dropped my phone and the headset having come out of it and then plugged back in.
Ah, okay, thanks. All right, with no other comments, then let's. Marika, we'll send that survey out as soon as you can get it into the Survey Monkey or whichever one we're going to use. And then let's head to as you're loading it right now to Stage 4. And see where we ended up. We scroll down. I think we were doing 3B, or I think that's where we ended up. If you look at the red line there, which we talked. Actually, we may have gone on. Nope, that's right, 3B. And Aubrey, did you have another question, or is that just the left?
Oh, sorry. No, I just never. I don't remember to put my hand down.
Oh, that's okay. So if we're on, so just to remind everyone, we're on, this is delivery of the recommendations to the board. And again, we talked about on the last call about sending this letter. We're still working on that. I think just we're probably done or as far as we can come on question 3 without having that sent out to the board. I think we should go straight to question or subject area 4, which is really just what the current bylaws state right now is that a successful GNSO vote of the council members will be deemed to reflect the view of the council and may be conveyed to the board as the council's recommendation. In the event a supermajority vote is not achieved, approval of the recommendations contained in the final report requires a majority of both houses and further requires that one representative of at least 3 of the 4 stakeholder groups support the recommendation. It says abstention shall not be permitted. Thus, all council members must cast a vote unless they identify a financial interest. Just jumping ahead. It says, notwithstanding the foregoing as set forth above, all viewpoints expressed by the council members should be included in the must be included in the report. Now, trying to see who on council we have here, but where does the whole abstention issue sit with the council at this point? Or does this reflect the final view?
Right. This is Marika. I think they're the OSC operations work team, I think, is looking at this issue, but I don't know if Margie maybe knows more about it.
I'm on the OSC.
Margie can too if you prefer.
Aubrey, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I don't know much about it. Okay.
There you go.
Yes, they've been looking at it extensively. They've been talking with staff, with legal staff, and I'm sure that Margie's been part of it. Ken Bauer has indeed written up something on the whole abstention and how to deal with that, and there's a whole very long section that's just about to go into review. So there's more on the final word, and I don't think we want to get into the details of it, but it certainly is something that's being worked, and it's something where a proposal is shortly to be made for, you know, comment and review.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure there's much for us kind of agreeing with you, Aubrey, there, that since there's other committees that are looking at it, I'm not sure there's much for us to offer as far as our thoughts on this question. I think this is more kind of logistical questions, at least with abstentions and with, let's see, obviously the sentence at the end that says that all viewpoints expressed by the council members must be included in the report. Does anyone agree with or disagree with that, I should say? Is there any comments on that? All right. So, you know, unless anyone disagrees, I would prefer to actually move on to number 4 is what it is, and it's more logistical and OSC is addressing it. So I kind of just would like to move on to number five. Wolf, Wolf just said, is the echo still on? I think it's gotten better. Does everyone agree?
Okay. Good, fine.
Okay, and maybe this is a question, and maybe it's to number five. Where is it that says that, I think it's number five, when the board actually votes? So number five states that, this is, again, the board will meet to discuss the GNSO Council recommendation as soon as feasible after receipt of the board report. In the event the council reaches a supermajority vote, the board shall adopt the policy according to the majority vote, unless by a vote of 66%. The board determines that such policy is not in the best interest of ICANN or of the ICANN community or ICANN. In the event that the board determines not to act in accordance with the majority vote recommendation, the board shall articulate the reasons for its determination in a report to the council, and to submit the board statement to the council. Then the council shall review the board statement for discussion within 20 calendar days. After receipt, then the board shall determine the method of by which the council and the board will discuss the statement. At the conclusion of the council and board discussions, the council shall meet to affirm or modify its recommendation and communicate the conclusion to the board, including an explanation for its current recommendation. In the event the council is able to reach a majority vote on the supplemental recommendation, the board shall adopt it. Again, same standard. Unless by 66% of the board they determine it's not in the best interest of ICANN community or ICANN. In any case in which the council is not able to reach a supermajority vote, a majority vote of the board will be sufficient to act. When a final decision on a GNSO recommendation or supplemental recommendation is timely, the board shall take a preliminary vote and, where practicable, will publish a tentative decision that allows a 10-day period of public comment prior to final decision by the board. So that's a lot in one section of the bylaws. And so taking that apart, the first question is, are these relevant? And that's an overall question. It's hard to answer, I guess. The sub-question there is, the first question that came out of it is, there's a current practice by the board to have a public comment period before taking a decision. Should this be incorporated in the bylaws? Let me throw that question out. Should the board be required, after the council report is issued to the board, recognizing all the public comment periods we've had before that time, should the board be required to have another public comment period before they take a vote? Everyone's silent. So I'll let you... think about that.
Question.
Oh, sure. Okay.
The question, are we assuming that there's one after? I think that there has to be one between the time that the GNSO approves it and the board considers it, but there don't need to be two of them. Now, where that one is located, you know, it seems to be the question, whether, you know, we certainly don't need two of them. We don't need one at the end of, or do we perhaps need one at the end of the GNSO process and then one at the beginning of the board process?
So when you say, just to clarify, when you say the end of the GNSO process, you're talking about after it already votes, after there's a board report, and after it's submitted to the board? Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying?
I'm not sure what I'm saying. I have to tell you the truth. If there's any time that there's substantive changes to the recommendation, you know, if looking back at guiding principles, anytime there's substantive changes, yes, it should be, public comment should be available and should be made. But if there's no substantive changes from the time the GNSO gets it, votes on it, even if that public comment was before their vote and sends it on, and the board gets, do we need yet another comment period to lengthen the process? And as I guess what I go on is, public comment is needed on substantive changes.
Finish.
No. I'm babbling.
Well, I was gonna answer your question with another question, which is, are public comments periods different? In other words, if the GNSO Council has, or the GNSO has a public comment period, could that be considered different by other people in the community than the board comment period? So, for example, maybe the GAC doesn't comment while the GNSO is going through its processes, or maybe the CCNSO doesn't comment while the GNSO is going through their processes, but maybe they wait until after the board, you know, gets to the board level. And then, you know, so my question is, are comment periods different? And if so, if they are, then maybe we should, you know, the board should still have its own comment period.
Yeah, that reinforces, if you're asking me, this is Aubrey again, that reinforces sort of our hierarchical pillars that says we don't care what one SO is doing or one AC is doing until they're finished, and perhaps that is the case. I don't know. I shouldn't think it was necessary, but perhaps you're right.
I mean, just thinking about the GAC, and sometimes they hold off on comments until it gets to that level, and I'm not sure, like you said, whether that's something we should endorse implicitly by saying, yeah, the board should have another comment period, but it may just be a reality of what actually does happen.
This is Aubrey, if I can ask again. If we put in the mandate in the bylaws that they have to, then it is that. If it's up to the board to get something from the GNSO and say, listen, there's been lots and lots of comments, the GAC has participated up until the end, et cetera, no, we don't need another one, or they can decide to have one. I don't know. I'm just...
Okay, so that would be kind of the, you know, let the board decide as it's doing now as to whether it wants to have a comment period. Anybody else with thoughts on that question? Okay. I mean, I think that makes sense, you know, at this point. So let me ask the question. So does anyone believe that it should be codified as opposed to being – so does anyone think it should be mandatory that the board has it as opposed to being optional? So let me see if there's anyone by checks. Does anyone think it should be mandatory? Okay, then let me see checks for people that think it should be optional at the discretion of the board.
Optional.
Okay, well, I'm seeing a couple checks for optional. So at this point, I'm seeing some more. Good. Sophia, it's a question.
No, it's not a question.
You were agreeing?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, good. So I think then that's the answer to that, for at least from this small group on the call today, is that we think it should be optional at the discretion of the board, and not it should not be mandatory. And so to continue on and just to add a little more color to that, you know, Aubrey, one of the things you pointed out is, you know, maybe that should depend on whether there's any substantive changes between the time in which there was a previous comment period. I think is certainly something the board should consider when deciding whether there should be this comment period. Aubrey, you want to add to that as well?
Yeah, I think the other piece of it is that one of the improvement goals, going back to that, is that there is wider community participation informing the recommendation. And so if a recommendation has formed where you can see that there was an incredible amount of CC and GAC and ALAC participation all the way through the process, then the board could sort of say, hey, you know, they had comments, they participated, they played together nicely, everything's cool, we can continue. Or they see something that was purely, you know, the four stakeholder groups did it together, nobody else cared, nobody paid attention, et cetera. So I think their view on reading it of the diversity and breadth of participation is also one of the considerations.
Okay, I think that's right. Anybody else have any other factors to add that the board should consider? Okay, let me jump to the next question then, which is this is an important one. I think we've talked about it in other contexts, which is should the board have discretion? We talked about this actually with the GNSO, right? And should the board have the discretion to pick and choose which recommendations, if any, to approve, or is the board required to adopt the entire recommendation? So in other words, does it have this, what we call here, at least in the U.S., is a kind of a line item veto, picks and chooses what it likes, and the others it can reject. So in the council context, we did reserve that right, I believe, for the council, but the working group would make it clear, though, that, you know, that there are recommendations which shouldn't be separated, which, you know, are the basis for the other recommendations. In other words, kind of like saying, you know, look, these should all be considered as one package, and it's very important that you don't pick and choose, because if you only adopt one of the three of these, then it really doesn't achieve the purpose. So I think we left it to the working group to really basically dictate as to say, you know, these are separate standalones versus these are all dependent on each other. James, you have a comment?
Yeah, Jeff, this is James speaking. Thanks. And that's essentially what I was going to mention, is that I think that you can leave that discretion or that latitude with the board the same way we did with the council, so long as the dependencies within the policy recommendations are maintained and declared, so that it doesn't make any sense to implement them singularly or in isolation from one another. Or maybe that can be a model as well for what for the way that the council packages recommendations for the board.
Right, and I think so. With ones, okay. So let's say that they should the board when it picks and chooses it, or so let's say they follow the working group, or at this point it'd be the council report. Do they have an obligation to send the other recommendations back? What happens at that point?
Yeah, this is James again. That's a good question, because it really gets to the heart of what we were discussing before, is that managing body shouldn't just simply disregard a recommendation of a working group or a council. It should send it back with questions or concerns that give them an opportunity to correct it. Because otherwise we have the de facto situation that we were discussing earlier.
Right, exactly. So let me ask the question, and Avery agrees with that. Let me ask a question. Does anyone disagree, or does anyone think that the recommendations that we made for the council on this issue should be any different, or let me ask it in the reverse. Should the recommendations for the board be any different than the recommendations we made for the council when the council considers a working group? Okay, so it sounds like we're at least on this group on the phone, we're in agreement that they should be treated similarly as the council reviews the working group. Avery, you have a question?
Yeah, it is a question. I think that there's more intimate relationship between the council and the working group working team than between the board and the GNSO, in that one is a real formal relationship where one is a more management process. And so it doesn't make sense. I mean, there's a certain sense in sort of saying the working group passing something up to the council and saying, these pieces must stay together, and these pieces are open for your line item veto. These are somehow optional, or they're not part of the core recommendation. Doing that with the board doesn't seem to me to have the same logic. and others, I tend to think that the board should be more presented with a full set of recommendations that they don't have the intimate relationship of the liaisons and common participation. It's not like the board ever participates in working groups. So there isn't the intimate knowledge of what's been going on. They should have a complete package. They should be able to send back questions. And one of the things that I'm not sure is in there that I always wished happened is that they approve something, but then there's some other issue that came out of their discussion, and they send back a clarifying issue, even after they've approved. And sort of like with the new GTLD, if a year and a half or 2 years ago or whatever, when they had approved it, they had said, yes, we have six, you know, we don't have enough people to knock this down. And so it is approved, but we've got some questions about trademark stuff. And so could you please, you know, go into this further in another PDP? That is the mechanism that they've got. So I wouldn't want them to, and I just didn't know how to say whether I agreed or disagreed when you asked the question, because I couldn't figure out which was the right answer. That's why I rose my hand. Raised.
Okay. So are there any other instances, you said that the new GTLD process, was there any other instance where, that you know of, where something was approved but you had kind of wished that they had sent back, there were some discussions that you kind of wished that they had sent back for the council or others to address?
Zafri again. I can't think of any offhand. That was certainly because that was a recommendation where the council had a vote before deciding, can any of these issues be separated out, because there had been a motion inside the council to separate the question. And the council had voted against separating the question and had decided that no, the recommendation had to be voted on in its entirety and sent it on. But it contains, 19 recommendations and all kinds of principles and everything else. Most other PDPs have been more or less one point or, you know, a lot clearer. So I can't think of another instance at the moment, but that's certainly one where, in general, the tendency was to want to approve of new GTLDs and the bulk of the work. But even at that time, there were questions in the board about, well, we don't really understand this one. Well, you know, how should that work? Well, did you consider all these things properly? That would have been totally reasonable within the board's, you know, bylaw prerogative to send a question to the council for PDP anytime they please. And obviously at the time I wish they had sent them back as opposed to letting things linger for 2 years. But that's the point.
Okay. Marge, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I agree with Aubrey that it would be useful to have more dialogue between the board and the GNSO council and to, you know, get clarifications on what the council was thinking or what the working group was thinking. I think there's it's probably too formal now and not enough, you know, interaction between the two. The one thing, though, that I would caution is, and I don't know if we were really going there or not, requiring the board to adopt all or nothing. Remember that the board members are you know, bound by fiduciary duties under corporate law, and they have to exercise their judgment, however, you know, it's applicable. So I just want to, you know, just highlight that having a, you know, hard rule about that probably doesn't fly from a corporate law standpoint. But certainly, you know, getting more information and dialogue between the, you know, the council and the board is a good thing.
Okay, Aubrey?
Yeah, I just would like to add that, though, that all or nothing is indeed the situation we are in now. And so, therefore, from the corporate bylaw fiduciary standards, it has been an okay standard. It's basically the case that if something in a PDP strikes them as wrong from the fiduciary responsibility viewpoint, then they should be able to reach that 66% threshold that sends it back and says, for the following fiduciary responsibility reasons, this recommendation does not work. Fix it.
Okay. Anybody else on that topic? So certainly an encouragement of more dialogue. I think we've talked about that at every level of more dialogue with the board or more dialogue with the council. Certainly to understand what's going on during the entire policy process, but certainly at this stage as well. If we go on to the next question, which is, should there be additional procedures for board GNSO interaction which may be useful to resolve any issues that may exist either within the council or between the council and the board? I think we just talked about that, really, about additional dialogue. One of the things we talked about with the council level is, should the working group have a chance to meet directly with the council, either through presentations to the council on the report or some other, on one of the council calls? I mean, could we not make that? I'm asking a negative question. Should we make the recommendation that the board, that there's something similar to that, where the council or maybe even the working group or whoever the council would like to have some interaction with the board once the report is delivered, so that it's not just staff that's presenting it to the board or, one staff person that's presenting it to the board, but maybe a chance for the board to ask questions of the council and or the working group? I see Aubrey has a check mark. Sophia still has her check mark, I think, from the last one, but I'll ask Sophia, do you agree with that? Do you think there should be some sort of presentation to the board or a chance for the board to ask questions?
I think, I think it's a very good idea. I've mentioned that way when we started this thing, but it's been a long since I came on board. Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I did. Thank you. I know we've kind of all – I'm asking the question. I pretty much know the answer because I think everybody in this group has kind of agreed at one point or another to more communication. And certainly the ability for anyone to present to the board other than staff has been pretty much non-existent. And I'm not sure that that's something that's worked in the past and something that – So if we have a similar recommendation here, Marika, in the report of, an opportunity for for the council to present the report to the board, and the council could, they could choose people from the working group or they could choose to do it themselves, but certainly an opportunity for the council to present the report to the board and be available to answer any questions, whether it's an in-person or just a teleconference call. Anyone disagree with that, or anyone have anything to Aubrey, you just put a comment on that could be the liaison. It could be. I don't think we need to dictate in this group who does that report, but just say an opportunity for the council or council members to present that report to the board and be available for questions. Okay.
I think I'm in agreement. I think I've been too quiet. I might just as well say I'm in agreement with Alex.
Yes. Hi, Alex. Great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Of course, I'm not Adobe. You have to excuse me when I interrupt the conversation, but we're trying to sort it out.
No, please do interrupt. And I know the difficulties that you have there with Adobe.
Okay. Thanks.
So James just posted a question on the on Adobe, which says, "Is the role of the liaison specifically defined somewhere, or is the working group work team looking at that question?"
This is Marika. Some of the roles, there is a description of what is expected of that person function in that role, but it's more giving a number of examples what is expected. It's no strict like. You only do this and you can't do that, but it's more a description of the role. And again, as said, the working group guidelines will go out for public comment probably by the end of next week. So, if people feel that there should be a stronger description or something like this should be added to it, you know, I would suggest or support you put it in the public comment period.
Yeah, I think, and Avery just agrees with that. I think one of the things I would say is, I think our report, I'm not sure we should be specific as to who we would recommend delivering that to the board. I mean, it could be the liaison. It could be the council may want the chair of that working group to do it, or the council may want the chair of the council to do it. I'm not sure we need to. Well, let me throw that question out. You know, my own feeling is that we shouldn't necessarily be prescriptive as to who we would recommend delivering that report. But and Avery, I guess, agrees with that. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Okay, Avery, I'm trying to look at what people are posting, and just for Alex's sake, because Alex doesn't have access to the Adobe at this point. So they were just talking about the roles of liaisons on the chat, and but I think Avery, in the end, you agree with the statement I just made as far as let the council choose who would like to present that to the board.
Yes.
Okay. Going on to the next question, which is, currently there's a staff report that's sent to the board on each issue. Should this practice, I think we talked about this already in other areas, but let me just finish reading the question. Should the council have the right to draft, review the report sent to the board? Should the part that goes to the board just be executive summary? Okay, I think we talked about this in topic number three, so I'm not sure let's not address that again. I think we all agree with the notion that that there shouldn't, let's not address it again. Let me ask another question in this area, which I had thought was a question here, but I guess I forgot about it. But at the end it says, or in the recommendation it says, and this has always been confusing in a number of PDPs, but you know, it talks about if there's a supermajority, then the board must do this. And then it says later on, it says, but if there's a majority, that's all the board needs to act. All right, let me get the exact language. Where is it here? Someone help me out here. I know I'd read it just before. Oh, here it is. In any case in which the council is not able to reach a GNSS supermajority vote, a majority vote of the board will be sufficient to act. Does anybody know what that means?
This is Avery. I can tell you what I always assumed it meant.
That's what I'd like you to do. Please.
Basically, at that point, they, by a majority of vote, can either approve or disapprove the recommendation. That basically, if the GNSO can't present a supermajority, then it's saying, here's a set of recommendations that, you know, have strong support, but or have a majority, but don't have that. So we leave the question up to you. We are presenting the work. We couldn't reach closure. We have a majority. You guys decide.
Right. And then the question that always comes from that, and I think that's right. I think it's a literal interpretation of it. The question that always comes, and I kind of wish Alan were on the call, because he and I know, have debated this and have discussed this topic. So maybe we'll re-bring it up when he's on the next call. But the question is, does that become, or could that become, a consensus policy? And so if the board acts, right, so some people have taken the interpretation, well, a majority was reached and it was approved by the board, and therefore it should be binding on the contracted parties.
Yeah.
And the contracted parties have taken the position that, no, the board can act, but that doesn't mean it's a consensus policy. So in other words, if the board acts on it and it's like the, you know, the new GTLD process, for example, you know, that's not a consensus policy in the way we think of it being binding on the existing TLD operators, but it's certainly guidelines and it's certainly something that they approve for the new GTLDs. So does anybody have thoughts on that? I know, Avery, you've been vocal on this too. It's
yeah.
been a source of confusion.
I mean, I certainly believe that, yes, because it was bylaws defined as a way to resolve a PDP which was a method of doing consensus policy. But, of course, I'm not a lawyer and I don't even play one. But for that reason, as it was a successful completion to the PDP and the PDP defines the method of consensus policy, yes, it should be consensus policy.
So let me throw that out to the contracted parties on this. So David Maher, James, what Avery's saying is that, you know, if a majority of the GNSO agrees with a policy, and then the majority of the board agrees with the policy, even though the GNSO is not able to get a supermajority, that should still be binding on the contracted parties and considered a consensus policy.
So, David, that bothers me.
Okay, can you explain why?
Well, it just gives too much power, I think, in policy areas that could have a very negative impact on registries because contracted parties.
Okay, and I think that's consistent with what certainly the registries have said before. James, any thoughts on that as a registrar contracted party?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. Trying to understand if when you say majority on the council, what flavor of majority are you talking about? Just a simple majority of the council as a whole, or majority in one house and a supermajority or unanimous in the other? Or I thought these were prescribed pretty specifically somewhere.
They are.
Yes, I can't remember what they are at this
but
point.
But it would definitely be, I think it's the majority of both houses, but I'd have to go back and look at the bylaws, which I'll do.
Margie, do you happen to know that off the top of your head?
Yes, it's Wolf speaking. So I was working on the...
Right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Let me go to... Margie, was that you responding or...?
Yeah, I'm looking at the bylaws right now. So to approve a PDP recommendation without a GNSO supermajority requires an affirmative vote of a majority of each house and further requires that one GNSO council member representative of at least three of the four stakeholder groups supports the recommendation. So there's two votes. There's you can approve a PDP recommendation with the GNSO supermajority, or you can do it through this non-supermajority requiring this affirmative vote of a majority of each house and one council member from at least three out of the four stakeholder groups.
And so has the general counsel or anyone from ICANN evaluated whether a majority would also be a consensus policy under the contract?
No.
Mike, can I ask a question?
Yes, Avery and then other people, and Wolf, too. I think Wolf had raised some. So, Avery, yeah?
I would think, and I'm not saying that this group can't decide to change that if they don't, you know, if the group doesn't like it, but I would think by having reviewed it as the PDP and accepted it and put it in the current bylaws that they must have reviewed it because the PDP is by definition, isn't it, the consensus policy?
No, Avery, if I may respond, a PDP doesn't necessarily have to produce a consensus policy. So I think that's where there's a disconnect. I haven't had this discussion with the legal counsel's office, so I don't know if they were thinking that when they approved the bylaws. I just don't know.
It'd be good to have that conversation.
Do you want that to be an action item for us to follow up on?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay.
Wolf, I know you started to raise some comments, so let me do you want to I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, no. I was just saying about similar, like Margie was commenting on. So it's okay.
Oh, okay. James, Did you have another? Oh, you just lowered your hand. Okay, so I think I'm not sure what I'm getting from this group as far as whether we want to change that. I do think that statement alone is confusing, and I do think there are different interpretations of that statement, which says that a majority shall be required to act. I do think this group should make some comments on that, because even on this group, having different interpretations of what it means to act, I think is reason enough that we should address it in some way, either by saying we don't understand what it means, or we think it's confusing and we think we need explanation as to, or here's the different interpretations that people have taken and this needs to be cleared up. I mean, at a very least, we need to do that, even if we can't decide what that meaning is.
Yes, I think Jeff, Alex here, yeah, I think that would be proper, so that from here on we move on and with clarity on what that on the two means. That's my view on that one.
Good, I think that's right. And I'd like to actually hear, I know Alan, like I said before, I know Alan Greenberg has commented on some of the working groups that we've been on together as to what that means. So I really want to get his thoughts on this as well. Is there any other, I'm trying to look at, any other questions on this Section 5 for the board vote? Okay, then I think we can jump on to number 6, which I think is a longer discussion that we'll certainly start today and see where we end up. But this is all on implementation. And this is from, so now that it basically says, upon a final decision of the board shall, as appropriate, give authorization or direction to the ICANN staff to take all necessary steps to implement the policy. And so we've had a number of different flavors of this over the years. In some PDPs, there's actually, I think way back to transfers back in 2003, 2004, where there was a transfer policy that was decided and then a separate transfer implementation team that was created to work out the implementation. There's been everything from that to domain tasting was brought up earlier on this call, where the policy was decided and pretty much staff had determined the implementation plan, but there was no implementation team, I don't recall, being set up for that. So the first question is, should the role of ICANN staff in developing the implementation of approved policy be further defined? What do people think on this call? Seeing Avery agree that it should be further defined?
I don't know how the definition is right now.
That's a good point. In order to further define something, you have to know what the original definition is, right? So I think your answer is yes, that it should be clarified or defined. James, you have a comment?
Yeah, just for the sake of being difficult here, I'm wondering what the concern would be if that were left somewhat undefined. Is it that staff would fail to implement the policy correctly, or that they would overreach and expand the policy beyond what it was intended to do? Or, I mean, what's the concern here? Is there one?
So, Avery, you have your hand raised. You want to address that?
Yeah, I think that, and this is going back to perhaps a software engineering metaphor, is that in an implementation, often while you're in implementation, you find yourself coming up against design or policy issues that basically hadn't been thought of and sort of don't become apparent until you're in the middle of implementation. And I think, at least in my opinion, we've seen several of those in the new GTLD. And so I think there needs to be a mechanism by which, when you get to those kinds of questions, and some guidelines as to how to identify those questions, where you go, oops, we could go this way or we could go that way. And whenever you get to one of those, we could go this way or we could go that way, depending on, you've probably hit a policy decision point. And so, here, another definition for PDP. And those are things that seem to have to be kicked back, at least perhaps not for a whole policy development process, but for a review. Is there anything that's policy substantive in this implementation query, or can we just move on? Just as in a software engineering project, I would expect the implementer who came up against one of these, you know, oh, do I go this way or that way, and it's a design issue, to come back to me as a designer architect and sort of say, yeah, you want to take the left path and not the right path.
Yeah, and I think, and then I'll go to James. I think it certainly has come up in a number of PDPs, especially ones that result in consensus policies. Not just those ones. I take that back. Certainly came up with new GTLDs. There's certainly been a debate as to what constitutes the policy versus implementation. And I know that staff has taken a view on certain items that they call just implementation, which is in their sole discretion as opposed to being policy, and others have taken issue with that. James, do you have a comment on that?
No, briefly, I wanted to thank Avery for kind of crystallizing that a little bit. In that context, I do recall that there were several contentious issues and some post-GNSO decisions that, you know, whether it was implementation or whether they were in effect, staff is creating new policy on the fly. But I just wanted to point out the idea that since this is these types of issues are probably by definition unanticipated by the PDP working group and the council, that there should be some mechanism without. I want to say that we don't want to necessarily put in a function where we try to anticipate all of these and lay out the guidelines or criteria by which the council has to be reengaged, but rather we should have more of a implementation review where the staff would essentially go back and reaffirm that what they're doing in an implementation is in line with what council intended, but with the policy. If that made any sense, I think that it's difficult to, you know, by definition, it's difficult to anticipate what these will be in advance. So what we just need here is a review and a recheck and a reaffirmation.
Jeff, I would like to comment on this one.
Yes, please.
Yes, I think rather than appearing to tie staff by trying to predefine their role on an implementation issue, and we are quite in agreement that issues will arise in the course of implementation, perhaps we could create that mechanism where we could probably just say that where there is where there are multiple implementation options, should the staff hit one of those situations where they find there may be multiple implementation options or possible policy issues arising, perhaps the mechanism is the one that should raise a red flag and say, okay, what should they do in those situations? Rather than appearing that we are starting by defining their role and confining them, it might constrain staff. That's just my view on this one. I don't know what others think.
Okay. James, is your hand up on that question? Or was it just left up? I guess it was just left up. So does anyone want to respond to Wolf's point? So Wolf's point is that if there are multiple implementation options, or that we shouldn't really restrict staff's role, but unless there's multiple options in which, you know, staff identifies, at that point they should involve, that's my next question, who do they involve? Do they involve the council? Do they involve the working group directly? Let me throw that one out there. So, Avery and then James.
Yeah, I think that you have a hybrid situation. I think what James recommended in terms of the periodic implementation reviews and basically walking you through the code is a good way to bring those out. I think in the other ones where there is something that might smell of policy, I think then basically contacting the council would be the council's the management of the managers of the policy process. The council would look at it, you know, they'd be able to decide, yeah, we think there's a policy issue here. No, we don't. If they think it's one, then, you know, it's up to them to initiate some process to deal with it or to send back a note to the staff saying, nah, you know, you're doing good. Keep going the way you're going.
Okay, James?
And just for the record, it's Alex who had given that. Sorry, I didn't give my name, that last comment. Sorry.
I'm sorry, Alex. Thank you. James?
Yeah, I think I'm just not entirely comfortable going too far into the arena of trying to insert a crystal ball into this process. So I think that Aubrey's point is correct. If there can be a mechanism by which the implementation is reviewed with the council, I think that's the appropriate level to do that. And then, you know, of course, leave open the discretion where the council can intervene even if staff doesn't approach them. But if council detects or believes that the implementation is straying into a policy question, that they can unilaterally reinsert themselves into that process.
Okay, I think that's a sensible recommendation. Does anyone disagree with that, or anyone have additional thoughts on that? Let me ask the question. So we've said the council. Are there areas that people in the community would want this to go to them as opposed to just the council, or is this a council issue? Okay, Aubrey, saying council.
I think it would be council as well. Alex here. Yeah?
Okay.
Council.
Okay. Margie, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I guess I question whether it is a council issue at that point, because isn't the role of the restructure to make the council more of a manager of the process? And so isn't it more appropriate to have the work team or the working group that came up with the recommendations deal with some of those implementation issues, you know, questions? And then the other question I have is if you go down the route of seeking input like this, and maybe it's formal, maybe it's not formal, what kind of a vote or approval would you want to be able to send the response back to the, you know, on the implementation, you know, questions that were raised?
I think Margie just took some of my questions out that I was going to ask next. So let's ask those. So take those. Margie's first question was: should this go to the working group, or should this really be the council in the new restructured environment? So Aubrey, you.
Yeah, I typed the answer, but just I'll say it too, since Alex is. I think that the working team is probably gone. In other words, the working groups basically don't normally persist after the end of a PDP process. And I don't know that it makes sense or even is possible to keep them online for, you know, the other year that it might take to implement something. Perhaps that is a good idea, but in which case, I don't know. I think that because the council is the manager of the process, I think that the issues go back to the manager. And then the manager is the one that has to do the right thing with it. I think it is a good question of what vote threshold does it take to reinitiate an issue, but I think that it really depends on the depth of the policy issue and, you know, how that goes. So I think you're right. There are some good answered questions as to, well, what do you do? And the question is also, does one keep a working group hanging out until such time as the implementation is done? And if so, you know that they're going to have their hands in the implementation much more because a working group has to be kept busy and has otherwise, you know, why is it there?
Okay. James, you're next.
Yeah, pretty much what I wanted to echo what Aubrey said is that I think that once something's been approved by the board and it's in the implementation phase, the council pretty much owns that, reconstituting the working group and then sending it back through the PDP process could, you know, I mean, in an ideal situation could be just a relatively straightforward process, but it could also reopen a lot of that work and essentially, you know, drag the implementation out for years. So I just wanted to agree with what Aubrey was saying.
Okay. David? David Maher?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was on mute. Sorry. I sort of disagree with that. I'm thinking of a couple of instances where recently staff very clearly decided to make policy, and the working group was, in a sense, had technically finished its work, but was also, I believe, fully available. It could be redone immediately, and it just seems to me more practical where there is a working group that has spent a lot of time, and when staff implements but starts making policy, which they have done, I think it would be better to go back to the working group. I'm sorry to say I have another meeting, so I have to drop off.
Okay, thanks, David. We're going to finish up in a few minutes anyway. Let me expand a little bit on David's comments, and I think you know, sometimes the working groups that we have now, I know there's definitely a lot of overlap between council members and working groups. I think in the future, what was envisioned, at least with the working group process, is that you'd have a lot more subject matter expertise. So is it possible to James and Aubrey to bifurcate? Yes, it should be the council's role to determine whether there is policy or whether there are issues in what staff is doing, but perhaps at that point it's incumbent on the council to actually find either it's through the working group that was or may still be around, or the subject matter experts to deal with that issue, as opposed to council themselves debating the issue once they determine that it is policy related, right? I mean, couldn't we bifurcate it and say the council's the one that makes the decision to say, hey, look, the staff's gone too far with implementation, it's actually crossed the line to policy, and now that we've determined that, we should farm it out to the working group if they're around, or some other subject matter experts. James, you have a comment?
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's a good point. In fact, that's what I presume the council would be doing. The question I was attempting to address was, you know, where's the first step and who ultimately has the decision? And I think the answer to both those questions is council, but how they arrive at that decision, whether they reconstitute the working group, you know, just poll the members if they're still around and active, or if they just you know, go back to the to their stakeholder groups and try and gauge what should be done there. I mean, how they actually arrive at the determination, I think, is really at the discretion of the council. But I just wanted to emphasize that my point was that they should be the first step where staff would engage them, and then that they should ultimately also own the decision.
Okay.
Maybe it was just an assumption on my part that was going to happen.
Well, I mean, so there have been some, and I know probably Aubrey's thinking, okay, Jeff, you're one of them, but there have been some that have argued that, you know, when this has happened in the past, council does or has not been the greatest at farming that stuff out, that council likes to take it on themselves. And so maybe providing guidance, you know, you give council the option of determining how they want to handle it, but providing guidelines saying, look, in areas where subject matter expertise is needed or is desirable, they may want to seek that out. Aubrey?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, that was the old council, because the old council was both manager and doer, and we're still in the evolving away from that. So I don't think that was necessarily wrong in the past. I think there's some interesting ideas here. The whole notion of a working group either sticking around or constituting some small section of itself to remain on hand as an implementation review team is actually something interesting, and we should probably consider it. That basically, you know, you don't need to keep the whole working group structure around, but the working group itself can constitute some small subgroup that remains a implementation review specialist, as it were, and that if more is needed, they and the council can bring a new working group back into effect. But just having, you know, within the IETF, we've certainly done that often, that one or two experts are left behind by a working group so that the area directors can consult them in times of, well, gee, what was meant here? Well, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's a really good suggestion. I think I like how you say left behind. They're the sacrificial lambs. But I think that's a definitely a good suggestion. Does anyone disagree with that? So to sum up this area, I think what we talked about is maybe, you know, kind of a bifurcation of the process of, you know, we don't want to define too heavily the role of staff, or we don't want to constrain the role of staff in implementation. That's one. But the council should be, you know, act in the policy management process of reviewing implementation to see whether they believe it crosses the line between pure implementation and policy. And if they do decide that there are policy issues, that they should be free to deal with those either through, you know, some standing members of the, as Avery suggested, kind of standing, I think you called it review specialists, which may be standing members of the working group that are still around, or the experts left behind. But essentially that should be a role for the council to decide, and maybe even the working group to decide those members that could be around as a resource in case these questions come up. Okay, good. I think we are just about, or we are out of time. I want to thank everyone. I think today's call has been great. We've gotten through a lot of issues, which I'm happy about, because I think we will close out this area on the next call. We'll close out four. And then hopefully start, we'll have the surveys out, Marika, before the next call next week to start addressing Section 5.
Yes.
Great. And I think the last question on this Section 4 is the same as the overall question, so I don't really plan on addressing that, the timing issue, until we get to the overall. Does that make sense? So I think we'll finish up implementation, which we may have. We'll just recap and maybe get some additional thoughts from Alan and some others if they're on the next call. Finish up stage 4 and then jump into stage 5. And then talk more about Nairobi. We didn't get to talk about it this time, but we're making such good progress. I didn't want to stop.
Jeff, just one question, because we are looking at the schedule for Nairobi, and at the moment there's quite some time set aside for the PDP work team. It would be good, like on the Sunday schedule. It would be helpful to get an indication maybe now on how much time you would need, and then we can still discuss, you know, what we use that time for, just to make sure that we, you know, block a chunk of time if the group feels it would like to meet there.
So I think there's enough people, or a lot of people on the work team have indicated that they will be there. So I think, how many, what's the time zone that Nairobi is in?
UTC plus 3?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so that's, so there right now it's like...
It's 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Yeah, 7 p.m. in the evening.
Okay, and is the time that's set aside in the morning or afternoon, do you know, on Sunday?
It's early afternoon. I think there are two slots set aside now, because I think we initially foresaw maybe doing quite some work there. So I think there's one slot just before lunch and one slot just after lunch set aside. But it's probably, I don't know if people can spend that much time, as there are, you know, a lot of other stuff going on as well, on this. So looking here, we now have set aside 11:30 to 1 and 2:15 to 4:45.
Let's keep that afternoon slot in this way, and we can have a call-in number. This way it's not too early for people in the United States to, you know, I know the IPC is not sending any members, and this way we can get a call-in number that they can join in, for the afternoon session.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Because I think every other, I believe every other member of the work team or every other constituency has at least one person that's able to attend the work team meeting, if I'm recalling that correctly. So I think if we do that, then the IPC can, and the business, or if they're not coming, they could actually call in for.
That sounds good. And we should have remote participation facilities available. And, you know, this might be an opportunity as well to maybe, as we have done some face-to-face time, to focus maybe on some of the recommendations and look at those.
Yep, I think that's a good idea. Okay, and we'll talk more about the specific agenda. We'll make that the first agenda item to talk about next week. Okay, thank you, everyone. Thank you for sticking this out. I think this is we've made a lot of progress in this call, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Alex. Bye.
Bye.